Welcome to episode 33 of the Walk and Talk podcast. I'm Greg Johnson, and today is Saturday, July 4th, 2020. The topic for this episode is titled Things I Should Be Doing. And this is a list that I started a while ago, and it's unusual in the sense that, you know, we have lists of things we are doing that we feel good about. We have things that we plan to be doing, but we usually don't keep a list of the things we should be doing. We don't feel good about that because it's stuff we kind of feel like, oh, I should be doing that, but I'm not doing that, and I probably won't do that, or at least not right away. And but the reason I started this list is because for me, it's kind of a reminder of some longer-term goals. It's an inventory of things that I admire when I see other people doing them. And I think, oh, you know, I should be doing that. And anyway, I'm going to read off the list. And it's in no particular order. I just keep this text file using Evernote. I have a lot of different notes in there. Mostly it's the tech work that I do. But I keep some what I call life administration notes and just different things I'm trying to plan or keep track of or reference items. And so this is the things I should be doing list, and I update it from time to time when I think of something else to add to the list. But at the top of the list is being a good host. I admire people who have good hosting skills, that they have people over, they have little snacks, pleasant place to sit, you know, nicely lit, and that I think that's a real skill, and it's something people probably develop over time, and maybe they learn it as they're growing up. I feel like I'm pretty attentive when I am hosting, but I just don't quite feel like I'm the best, you know, host, and I don't really socialize a lot, so I guess that's part of it, is that some people really make an effort to get together with others. Right now, during the global pandemic, there's a lot less of that. But still, that was something that was on my list. And just that, you know, I admire it when I see people who regularly are having groups over, either small groups or, you know, a dozen folks. The second item is, and these aren't numbered, but just the second one here, supporting NPR public radio, and probably I would add to that like your local public radio. Probably have, like, in Iowa here we have Iowa Public Radio, but there's also National Public Radio, and there's public television and Wikipedia. There are these certain, like, infrastructure resources, I would say, that we rely on and that are a positive influence in our society, and it's good to be supporting them regularly. So this was kind of moving from my should be doing list to the starting to do list. And a few years ago, I went ahead and signed up for like the $5 a month thing. You know, a lot of these nonprofits, you'll see a message, it'll say, you know, if everybody who used our service would pay $5 a month, our entire budget for the year would be covered or something. So I feel like if I can make a small donation, and if I can encourage others to do the same, and if others do the same, then it can have an impact. And there are these, like I say, you know, with roads and schools and libraries, we have taxes for those things. But for some of these really valuable social resources, there's not really a built-in mechanism other than fundraising for them to pay their expenses. And I just feel like, you know, people that do give regularly to those things, I admire those people, and I want to be one of those people. So, and kind of similar to that is local theater. And there are a lot of aspects to supporting local theater, but partly it's just the idea of buying local, you know, that instead of paying for unlimited different streaming video services like Netflix and Hulu and renting movies from that little red box thing or whatever a person is doing, that money is going somewhere else. you know, sort of like when you spend money at a casino, it goes from your local little casino to somebody in Vegas or in the Cayman Islands or something, I don't know. But so, you know, when we invest time and money and energy in local theater, it builds local talent, and it keeps our money local. And it's just a way of investing in our community and kind of taking control over entertainment. So, and depending on the size of community you live in or the talent that's available, quite often theater can be equal to or better than what you're going to find, you know, going up and down the hundreds of TV channels that are available on satellite or cable or whatever. So, anyway, I think the other thing I'll point out here early on in the list is when you think about these things, like who gives to theater, who gives to public radio, who is good about hosting when people come over, right? You start adding these things up and you think of people, people come to mind, and those are people you admire. It's like, you know, these are all like the same person does all these things, you know? The next one is supporting local live music. And that's similar to theater, but the arts. I think sometimes we feel like, oh, we should support the arts, you know, like the local bank and the local grocery store. And there are other, probably the local music business that sells pianos and whatever. You know, it's like there's certain, oh, and realtors, of course, would be supporting the arts. So there are people that support the arts just because it's sort of the right thing to do, and you get your name on the playbill, and it's just sort of expected, you know. But the nice thing about supporting local music and local talent, just like it is with the theater, is just that it creates an investment in local creativity. I recently heard that, I think it was New Zealand, that decided, the government decided to spend millions investing in the arts because they felt that there was a definite, you know, if you look at it from a business perspective, return on investment. And certainly just quality of life is increased. And so while we'll always, you know, have our favorite bands or whoever that we're hearing on the radio, it's really nice to find local musicians that are playing folk music, or, you know, there's a whole revival with big band music. People are playing music from like decades ago. So anyway, that's kind of fun. And the other thing is banking at a credit union. And I don't do that. I have in the past, but that just sounds like the right thing to do. You know, it's sort of like going and shopping at your local member-owned co-op natural type food store. It just sounds like the sort of good thing to do. So I've thought about doing that. You know, I guess the way these work is they're like member owned and they're member meetings and stuff. So there's sort of some local control over the credit union. That's the idea behind it. And the reason I'd switched away was just because at the time, and this was a long time ago, but I needed and wanted to have access to some like online banking services that just weren't around back then, except with the bigger banks. But anyway, that's something I'll continue to think about and maybe do and support. Buying food in bulk is something else that I have thought just makes sense. And when you see people at the store buying food in bulk, you know, that's a certain kind of person. And you look at them and you kind of admire them because you think, wow, they are living a sustainable life and not throwing away a lot of containers. I've noticed in the past few months with concerns about the COVID pandemic, the bulk food sections have been closed down just to avoid people sneezing into the, you know, raw foods. But if and when that comes back, that's something I think would be good to pursue. And I just had not to this point, because part of the reason for me is I'm trying to avoid high carb foods. And if you look at the bulk food items, a lot of it is, it's like granola, rice, grains, you know, all these things that are pretty high in carbs. If you're not somebody that needs to be watching carbs, then I guess that would not be a concern for you. But anyway, it just seems like some method of making bulk foods available should really be taking over as a trend and as the dominant way of buying food. Like, why do we keep buying stuff in containers and either throwing the containers away or running them through a complicated recycling workflow, you know? And I would think there'd be some sort of like universal container design where you wouldn't have to have direct contact with the food. You wouldn't be putting a scoop into a bin of granola, but instead like having a little hopper or something. You put a container in, it gets filled up, you take it out, and there's like no contact with the food. I know that some bulk foods are in bins where you pull down the lever and then the food comes out and goes into a little bag, so that should work. Anyway, bulk foods. Seems like it's good for the planet, good for everybody. And then, and I might just add to that, at our local natural food cooperative, they have a frozen food section that's bulk food. And they've subsequently, in the last few months, sort of started pre-packaging that because of concerns about the virus. But it was where you could like take a little scoop and you'd scoop up as many servings as you wanted and put it in a container. And so it would go a step beyond just the typical bulk foods you think of, like the nuts and the grains and the rice, etc. Composting. So again, the people who are composting are the same people who are listening to NPR. And they're the same people that are buying bulk at the grocery store. And they ride their bike all around. It's like there's this kind of personality or person who does all these things. And you look at them and you think, that's admirable. I should be doing that. And that's like, that's how this list got started. So composting. Now, that has moved from my should be doing to the currently am doing list. I wanted to get a garden plot this year, and I just didn't get that set up. There are some public garden spots, and you have to be pretty quick to reserve those because they go quickly. But the idea was that I would have my own place to do composting. But the local cooperative natural food store has, among the recycling options, one is for composting. So that's what I do once a week or once every couple weeks. I have a bucket that I'll just take there and dump. And so I feel like at least the food scraps are not going into a covered, you know, landfill area and taking up space, but they're going back into the earth and getting, you know, recycled essentially. So that's composting. I'm leaving that on the list just because I want to keep this list as a reminder of here are the things that I feel are good for people to do, I admire in others, and some of them I'm trying to adapt to my own life as I'm able. The other is community-supported agriculture that's sometimes called CSA. I went to this neighborhood on the east side of Iowa City and met with some people that are doing this, and it's like they started gardening in their backyard. So instead of mowing a yard, they got a tiller and they just tilled the thing up and enriched the soil and then started gardening back there. And I'm sure it probably started with like tomatoes and, you know, the basics, some herbs and things, but it kind of branched out. And then they started looking around in the neighborhood and they realized, you know, there's a lot of land here. They could turn that whole neighborhood into like a farm. So that's what they did, is they went to their neighbors and said, hey, I notice you're not using your front yard, or I notice you're not using this yard over here, backyard or whatever. And they just started expanding out, and you go over there and it's like a farm and a suburb. It's an old part of the city, so, you know, it doesn't look too weird. I mean, it kind of fits in because I guess in these newer suburbs where, you know, the tallest tree is like 6 feet tall, and the homes are these kind of McMansions. You wouldn't expect to see people farming there, although that would be great. There's probably more sunlight getting to those places. But anyway, what you do is you find somebody that's doing this community-supported agriculture that's happening in a lot of cities, and you just join the club, and you say, okay, I want to pay, you know, $30 a week. I'm going to come by and get my fresh food from the garden. I think there are probably opportunities to go ahead and do some gardening in for the CSA. Maybe that's like in trade for food or something, but it's really interesting because it builds, well, it's local for one, and it builds like right where you're standing in your front yard, a job. You know, if somebody, this person is making like pretty good money as having gardening as their full-time job and having this food available, and people really appreciate it. So we need food, we need jobs and a source of financial income, and this provides it. So it's kind of a neat idea. Anyway, it seems like something that a person should be supporting. And as I've met the people that are doing this urban agriculture, and as I've met the people who are supporting it and who are buying the food, it's all the same people that I've just been mentioning these other things. They ride their bikes, they listen to NPR, etc. So it's a good thing to do. And you kind of, I just had mentioned composting, so that's kind of in the same vein there. And cooking. Now that's something that's changed recently. When I'm out and around doing this consulting work, I'll stop wherever and get some food because I'm going from point A to point B and I don't have the time or it's not convenient to go home. I suppose I could cook some food and take it with me, but cooking is something that I've always admired when I see other people cooking. And now with the stay-at-home quarantining that people are doing, well, not exactly, not everybody's quarantining, but everyone is trying to be staying at home and having social distancing and not really go out unnecessarily. So I think more and more people have been cooking, and there's been kind of an increased interest in cooking shows on YouTube and such. So anyway, cooking's good though. It can save money. It puts people more in control of what they're eating. It can just give you, I think it's good for the brain. You know, anything that has us being creative and making things is good for us. And it's social, you know, you get in the kitchen, you know, whatever your home situation is, you and your partner, spouse, kids, whatever, you work together in the kitchen, and it's a good way to just be hanging out and visiting and getting things done. So that's cooking. And I've been doing more of that lately. I have some recipes that I put on my website that are, I call like instant recipes, like things you can just quickly put together and you have a meal. I sort of like that. But I also enjoy kind of more complex recipes too. Creating jobs for people by running a labor-dependent business. And that's so important. I've never been one of those people who starts a small business and has an HR department or hires people. And I really admire that because, you know, being an entrepreneur isn't for everybody. There are lots of people that really want to have a skill. They want to go into the marketplace and be paid for their skill and have kind of a reliable 9-to-5 job and not have to worry about everything that goes into managing your own business. And so the people who create jobs and who create pleasant and fruitful, rewarding workplaces are really doing a big service to society. And, you know, that's been true forever. There are certainly some unfortunate situations where you have people creating workplaces that aren't as financially profitable for the workers and not fun to work at. But, you know, in general, it's something I admire. Somebody that's creating jobs, that's really taking care of and having concern about others' welfare and well-being. So that's jobs. Oh, and then there's this organization. This is the next item. Dances of Universal Peace. And you probably haven't even heard of it, unless you've heard of it. But it's kind of off the beaten path. Dances of Universal Peace. What it is, it's these people that get together. And it's usually like once a month. But they get together and dance. And there's usually a designated leader to the group who maybe plays guitar, and there's some singing. And this kind of a close contact event is not something that's been going on in the past few months. But up until the pandemic, it was something I've participated in a few times, really enjoyed it, and really admire the people that are involved in it. And it's something that I feel has the potential for great impact. Just something about the connections that people make, the kind of intention and spirit behind these dances and the songs. And they're kind of like prayers, basically, and they draw from different traditions of faith. And so it's just kind of like people coming together, respecting each other, valuing each other, having in their mind and heart a hope for a better world. And if you believe in this kind of thing, that, you know, people doing good and acts of kindness can have a ripple effect in the world, then, you know, this Dances of Universal Peace is something that you'd be interested in knowing more about. But anyway, I'm going to keep that on the list. There probably are some other things similar to that. The other experiences I can imagine that would be similar to that would be peripherally similar, would be like retreats and workshops where you go to Vermont and stay in some off-the-grid cabins and then do, you know, yoga workshops with people or visualization or meditation or something. You know, it's kind of like things that connect people, things that cause people to look beyond the current problems and challenges and envision a better future. But anyway, so that's Dances of Universal Peace. And then just in general, donating to charity. I mentioned above previously about Wikipedia and National Public Radio and public television, you know, these kind of core resources in society that are not controlled or funded by or dominated by or influenced by necessarily too much, you know, corporate influence or political influences, politicians, whatever, that just kind of provide educational, factual information to people. And that's very valuable. But then beyond those things, there would be charities with, you know, specific goals. And so I think that's a good thing, you know, to find charities that you believe in that are working on challenges in society and working on problems that seem to be slipping between the cracks. So that's probably actually a good topic for a totally other episode, just to talk about giving to charity and what charities we pick and all of that. But anyway, that's one of the items. And I have in the past maintained what I call a portfolio of charities. So I would give to these different causes and I would feel like, you know, that's probably going to have an impact if you have this like diversified portfolio of nonprofits you give to. And then in recent years, what I've started doing is giving more directly to local charities and often just giving in kind. So I'll give a computer or I'll give free tech support, which can be worth, you know, hundreds of dollars to them. Much more than I might feel like I could afford if I was just, you know, writing out a check. So Anyway, I like the idea of volunteering for local charities because then you get to really personalize that gift. And you kind of see where your efforts and investments are going. You can be reassured that you're having an impact. And anyway, I just think that kind of goes along with some of the other items mentioned above, supporting local theater, supporting local music, etc. And it's just nice to, you know, build your local community. So that is giving to charity. And some of these I've actually expanded onto my list, and so there might be some duplication, and I'm just going to kind of skip over those. But next here on the list was Wikipedia, LibreOffice, Linux. So in addition to charities that are in charities in general, and the kind of infrastructure items I mentioned, the public radio, public television, there are also some interesting initiatives going on globally where countries have decided that their government agencies and schools are going to be using Linux computers. So they're not going to be spending and sending taxpayer money to Bill Gates or, you know, to Microsoft or Apple, basically, right? If they use Linux, they are supporting a global community-based effort, and it costs less, presumably. But that's another thing that you may want to be supporting. And I like also LibreOffice is a free alternative to Microsoft Office. So it's like Excel, spreadsheet, word processing, but a free version. And while most people probably would not have a financial challenge, you know, would not find it challenging financially to go out and get a computer and pay the $100 a year for a Microsoft Office subscription, which is now called Microsoft 365, there are some people for whom that kind of is a challenge, and that they don't have the money to be spending on commercial software. And particularly if it's a business and they need 10 computers, Linux is something that you can get for free, and it runs on older computers. And then with LibreOffice, you could really save a lot of money. And I like the idea of just these basic tools being available to everybody. Okay. Electric car, that's on the list. You know, as I research electric cars, I know there's some things I like about them, that at the point of the vehicle, there's zero emission. Somewhere there's emissions from the electricity getting created, either with coal or, you know, nuclear power or something. But at least, you know, in the big cities or wherever the cars are being driven, they are not polluting. And presumably there's a efficiency of scale, so that it's sort of like, you know, a lawnmower puts off a lot of really bad smell and bad pollution. And so do these little moped, scooter, motorcycles, things like that. They just do not have very good pollution control. And you can smell it, you know. And so the bigger the vehicle gets, the more you can, I guess, more budget as well. But, you know, like most cars produce less emissions per horsepower or whatever than like a small scooter. And so with electric cars, the idea, I guess, is that, you know, somewhere there's some very energy efficient, low emission power source that's going to provide the power for these cars in a way that an individual car can't be as efficient. And if you think about it, it makes sense. Like, why have, you can see there are power plants. They're huge. They're not excessively huge. They're like, there's a certain size at which a power plant is efficient to operate. And that makes sense. you don't want to, there's probably no efficient or practical power plant that's going to be the size of a McDonald's restaurant. And so, you know, once it reaches a certain size, then you get lots of power being generated efficiently and hopefully with relatively low emissions. And there obviously are other power sources like solar and wind, and there's the ability to use water, hydro. But the point is, a car and the engine in a car as a power source just doesn't really make sense. It makes sense to have it scaled properly, find the right size, find the right fuel source, whatever that is, and separate, you know, the creation of energy from the car, which just needs to propel you forward, but doesn't necessarily need to have its own built-in energy plant. The Chevy Volt is an example of a car that has an engine in it that generates electricity for the car to run. Basically, you know, that's one advantage of the electric cars, is that less pollution at the point of use. And if you're in a big underground parking facility and you have electric cars in there, that's nice. There's less carbon monoxide. So the other thing is they're less noisy. And there's so much noise pollution. This morning, as it is a holiday and it's early in the day and it's Saturday, there are a few cars on the road, but not quite as noisy as it normally would be. And when you're walking along a trail, it's nice not to have so much background noise. So anyway, if we could have roads and sidewalks that are less noisy and less polluted, that would be a good thing. So electric cars, but they're still becoming, and I guess I'll say this makes sense, that you would think like, oh, electric cars make sense. Why don't we just mandate, you know, electric cars, 100% electric car use by 2025 or something. The problem is that right now, given the current technology, electric cars are not practical for 100% of the people. And the manufacturing of the electric car and the generating of the power for the electric car, those activities are not without some carbon impact. So it's not like these electric cars are grown in on farms, and you know, they require a lot of energy to create. And for some people, depending on their commute needs, the electric car may not work. There are people that drive 2 or 3 hours to get to work, and maybe there's not a charging station, etc. So it takes time to build in the infrastructure, takes time to bring the prices down to the point where everybody can afford it, and it's not just a luxury novelty item. If you live in an apartment, then you may not have a place to plug in and charge up your car. Or maybe there's a 120 volt, you know, home plug-in, regular AC plug. You could plug into that, but if you've studied this, you know that electric cars, when they're plugged into just a regular outlet, might only charge at a rate of, you know, giving you 4 miles of driving for every hour of charging. So basically, the person in that situation is capable of 4 miles per hour, essentially. You know, you'd have to charge for 10 hours to get 40 miles. You'd have to charge maybe for a few days to charge up completely. And so anyway, for people that are homeowners, for people that don't really plan to be doing a lot of cross-country driving, and those who just need an around-the-town car, and they have plenty of access to charging stations, and then that makes sense. And also, if you have a dealership nearby, like Nissan has the Nissan Leaf, they've had this electric car for many years, so it's really becoming more perfected greater miles per charge, and you'd have a local dealer to do repairs and a supply line for parts and stuff, right? So you kind of need that. And I know that Tesla and other more like luxury electric cars are intriguing, but it's not really practical for most people. Like if you have to drive to some other city with your car that doesn't work, I guess you'd have to have it towed. It's just not easy, not practical. So that's electric cars. For many years, I've been using HP printers. I like them just because I guess they're familiar, and in some of the functions that I use, like on a multi-function printer, the printer, scanner, copier, fax machine, I often find I'm doing a lot of scanning, and I've tried Canon and Epson and Brother, and the scanning software, at least in the past, has just not been that great. And the scanners take time to like warm up and they go slow. And with HP, I've always had good luck with scanning. So I guess that's why I kept getting HP printers. But I feel like HP does not offer the best option when it comes to being environmentally friendly. They're still selling these little plastic ink cartridges. They're expensive. And that's like, why? You know, Epson has something that's like an eco tank. Brother also has that option. And they have it across the line of products for the most part. And you can find these high capacity replaceable ink where you just refill the ink tanks, and it's economical, there's less waste, it's better for the planet, better for the people. And HP has just been kind of dragging their feet on that, which is too bad. And so I've been feeling like, well, I should probably, like the next printer I get should probably be one of these eco tank printers, because it's just the right thing to do. You know, and the other thing HP has been doing is they have this thing called Instant Ink. And I've written articles about this, and I'll get phone calls from elderly, retired people who are stressed and frustrated from all over the country. It's because of this article I wrote. They'll search, they'll find the article, they'll see my phone number, and they'll call. And they'll say, "What's going on with my printer? You know, I can't print and this thing isn't working." And so I have to walk them through what's happened. And what's happened is that they've sort of been tricked into signing up for an ink subscription. And they reasonably say to me, "Well, why don't I just go to Staples and get some more ink?" And I have to explain to them, you know, you can't, because HP now has control over your printer. And HP is not going to let you print with anything except the ink that comes from them that's part of this subscription. And they'll say, "Well, what if I had to print, you know, like 50 pages on a weekend and I ran out of ink before the renewal comes?" And then I have to tell them, "You're out of luck." And, you know, it's just not a good situation. It's like from 20 years ago. I don't know if you even are aware of this or would remember if you're old enough, but cell phone companies used to say, like, "How many minutes a month do you want to talk?" Who knows how many minutes they're going to talk in a month ahead of time, unless you're clairvoyant, you know? But really, you're going to use whatever minutes you use. Why not just charge a fair price and that's the end of it? Well, eventually, consumers got so frustrated with cell phone plans and having to, you know, pay overages or pay for more than you're actually using, inevitably, right? You're gonna say, "Oh, I'm gonna use 500 minutes a month," and you're either gonna come in at 400 or you're gonna come in at 700. Unless you use exactly 500 minutes, you're paying more per minute than you should. Guaranteed. In fact, everybody is, right? Because you average out what you paid, how many minutes you talked. And if you go over, you're going to pay a premium there. And if you go under, well, you're just paying money for something you're not getting. So anyway, it just, maybe the Federal Trade Commission was involved with shutting that down. I don't know, but it was really unethical. And so that's what HP is still doing today with this ink plan. And they say, okay, pick the number of pages you're going to use. And so people understandably probably would pick a little bit higher than they think they might use. They don't want to have to pay a premium for extra pages. And then HP, I think they're doing like this rollover, sort of like the minutes used to be with a cell phone plan. You can roll over a certain number of pages from one month to the next. And it's so convoluted and so messed up. And so what I advocated was, I said, look, if you want to take over people's printers and monitor how much they're printing and when they're low on ink and ship some ink out, that's one thing. But you don't have to lock the printer. You don't have to, like, lock a device. Somebody's purchased that printer and now they can't use it. And so I described how, you know, software could monitor the printer, notice when it's low on ink, and just send out regular ink. And if this regular ink gets lost in the mail, well, then the person can go to Staples. They can still go get ink for their printer. There's nothing unique about the ink being used. Well, Brother has gone ahead and done just that, which proves it can be done, and it's certainly more popular than HP's plan. And so Brother has this service where they'll monitor your ink level and send out ink. And if you don't get enough ink, or you need more ink, or you want to get an extra capacity cartridge, whatever you want to do, they're fine with that. So that's kind of the responsible, respectful, ethical, proper way to do it. And I still am baffled as to why HP is doing what they're doing, because it frustrates a lot of people. And they're really hard selling it. The people in the stores are told to try to get people to buy into this instant ink. I don't know if there's some kickback or whatever, but the salespeople are pushing it. When you install your software, it basically looks like you have to do instant ink, because, like, they're saying, oh, here are your different options. And then in really fine print below, there's an option like, I don't want to do this right now, you know? But only if you notice that fine print can you kind of get out of that and finish setting up your printer. And then even after you've set up your printer, you'll get these little notifications pop up like, oh, don't you want to be using instant ink? So it's like they're really pushing this thing. And anyway, so that's a long rant, but basically I feel like, yeah, I should be switching to another printer company that's a bit more responsible to consumers and to the planet. The other thing is, the next thing on the list is faith community participation. There are people that go to synagogue or mosque or church, and it's a point of community and contact, and I think is a real positive benefit for a lot of people. I know that in our culture these days, in addition to the pandemic, we're just generally in a culture that does not embrace as much sort of religion and spirituality, I think. I mean, that's just my sense of it. But I guess that just depends on where a person lives and who a person interacts with. But it just seems like there isn't as much of that today. But anyway, I sort of admire it, you know, if somebody's involved in some sort of community organization. And I guess for some people, if it's not church, there are other things like Rotary Club or Lions Club or these different community civic organizations that do a lot of good and are a point of bringing people together. And I just don't do that. So anyway, you know, these days I guess a person can get online and participate, but something that's on the list, I do think it's good. There have been studies done that suggest, you know, the singing and prayers and reading and engagement, these topic-focused groups that exist are all, you know, good and beneficial to health and all of that. So anyway, that's why that's on the list. And then the next item is farmers market. So I really think the farmer's market is another example of a way to support local business, and not just like in generically supporting the local economy, but really supporting local farmers and getting some really nutritious food and helping build the local agriculture infrastructure. So farmers markets are good. And they're also like reminding us that commerce does not need to have Madison Avenue branding and big box stores. That if we want kind of the, it's the basics of, I hate to use a dirty word, but capitalism. But you know, that's what capitalism is. It's somebody who harvests honey or apples or some fruit from an orchard, or grows some vegetables, or makes some something with wood or knitting or whatever it might be, and they're selling these things at the farmer's market. And you know, there's no fancy branding needed. You just need a card table set up, have some item of value, and people will buy it. And it's nice. It's like that's the basics of having a local economy and people bringing together their different talents and creations. So yeah, I like the farmers markets. And as I keep repeating, you start to think about who goes to farmers markets, who is composting, who's riding a bike, who's listening to NPR, all these things. It's like there aren't 10 different groups of people that don't know each other. It's like the same people that do all these things. And these are all kind of things we admire and things that are positive for individuals and for the community. And the next item is gardening. So I've kind of touched on this a little bit with the idea of composting and local urban agriculture and all of that. But gardening, you know, that's another thing that you'll see these people doing. And it's good for the planet. It is good for people. If the gardening is, you know, like some landscaping with flowers, then it's inspiring to look at. But it's even more grounded than the farmer's market. I mean, you have your food right outside your door at home with gardening. So that is something that's really kind of cool when you think about it from an economic standpoint, that instead of getting in the car and driving to the job and earning the money and then paying all the bills that you have to support that cycle, instead, and of course then there's taxes and all that, so instead of, you know, doing that, and then after you've paid all your expenses and your taxes, you've got this little bit of money left, and then you drive to the grocery store and you buy food and then you drive home, that's a lot of effort. You know, I mean, why not just grow that food right outside your doorstep and avoid all the other stuff? You know, if you could actually grow all your food, you wouldn't need to earn the money, at least, that is required to buy food. Anyway, I think that gardening is really cool. So from a food standpoint and exercise standpoint, doing your own composting, creating a better environment and better utilization of land, you know, impacting global warming in some beneficial way, etc. And then the next item, having a dog. There are certain people that have dogs, and they're generally, I think, good people. Oh, quite coincidentally, there's somebody behind me on the trail with a dog. But it's just something to be admired. And we learn a lot from four-legged companions. And so I find that people who spend time around animals end up learning a lot of beneficial social, they're not socially awkward, you know, that they're going to be trained by the animal to be maybe more outgoing and more confident and more playful or whatever. You become like those who you spend time with. So anyway, I think there are a lot of benefits to having pets and dogs in particular. And again, you're going to find, like, I mean, this sounds like something out of a Subaru commercial, but you know, the person who's driving the Subaru, who's going out to go hiking, that has the dog, you know, it's like a whole lifestyle thing. And those people are usually more rugged, you know, and probably in better health because they're getting out, because they're taking their dog for a walk or whatever. So anyway, having a dog. And then next on the list, and this part of this list is alphabetical, so this is just kind of next here, is just having friends. And we all think that we have friends, you know, through social media. We have friends on Facebook, right? So, but what I'm talking about is there are people who, kind of like I was saying earlier, the good hosts that are regularly, you know, taking the initiative to have people over and to create social environments for people. But there are people who have friends who they go bowling with every week, or they go golfing with, or there's some regular non-work related interactions on weekends or Thursday nights or whatever it might be. And that's what I mean when I'm talking about having friends, is that it's something we don't see as often these days. People are working, they go home, their socializing is online, but they don't have these interactions. And that has been exacerbated by the pandemic and people staying at home and the social distancing. But anyway, I sort of admire that, people who keep these friendships. Women I know, sometimes it would be women who are retired, but actually even before that, they'll have friends that they get together with for lunch, regular lunch dates, and they get together and hang out. And that's all good stuff. And so I admire that, and I haven't quite done that. I think partly because my work keeps me busy. That for me is sort of a social component, that I'm interacting with people, I'm helping them on their computer, and I see people frequently enough that I can kind of build a relationship with people. And so it's rewarding in that way. But I still admire people that have different activities they do, and that they get together with friends. And that's not for everyone. I know that there are people that just, it's maybe not that they're socially awkward, but they just don't quite fit into that, like the TV show Friends or whatever, these, you know, scenarios you imagine people getting together and going biking or surfing or whatever. And part of that may have to do also with where you live. If you're in an area like Colorado or California, where there are a lot of sort of outdoor activities that tend to bring people together to socialize, you'll be more likely to be more social. If you are in a place like Iowa, where it can be 90 or 100 degrees in the summer and sometimes gets to 30 below zero in the winter, any sort of interactions are going to be indoors. So there's less of people going out and interacting. Okay, so next on the list is hiking. And I've tried to do more hiking, but hiking is really good. It connects us with nature. It's a way to socialize with others. The promotion of hiking and hiking trails helps to care for the environment. And so hiking is something I'd want to do more of. I think it's more beneficial than just walking, because hiking, usually you're hiking on a trail and some uneven terrain. Drinking herbal tea is on the list, and that's something that we don't think about this often, but, you know, when we're making food choices like herbal tea over a can of Pepsi, it not only is, like, better for you, but it's sort of better for the planet. You know, somewhere there's a farm where people are growing these different teas, and that land is set aside to be used for growing tea, and they're making money growing tea and selling it to the people that get it to you. So it's like it creates a whole economy around protecting the environment. So there's that aspect of it as well. And again, I'm going to keep repeating, you know, everybody on this list that I'm talking about, they ride their bike, they shop at the farmer's market, they listen to NPR, they drink herbal tea. And so it's one of those things you're going to admire when you see people doing it. And the next item on the list is riding a bike. It's good for the planet, good for your health, reduces noise pollution, reduces air pollution, reduces wear and tear on local roads, reduces traffic congestion, gets you out and able to see things that you wouldn't see if you were on the highway or driving fast on the local roads. And so there's just a lot of benefits to having a bicycle and riding the bike and taking trails. So that could be a whole other podcast. Actually, I did do a podcast on bicycling, but anyway, the next item is eating vegan or eating plant-based, a diet of plant-based foods. And there are a lot of benefits to the planet and benefits to health, depending on the food choices you make. But that's something that sounds like it would be a good thing to do. I'm vegetarian, but I'm trying to cut back on dairy and cheese and things that are actually, you know, the unhealthy parts of a vegetarian diet, which are the eggs and cheese and milk. So I guess that's one reason why I'm sort of attracted to veganism, is because it's like vegetarian, a more healthy version of vegetarianism, maybe something like that. Keeping in touch with old friends is on the list. So there's some people that are really good about that, that will, you know, send Thanksgiving, Christmas, Easter, or non-religious, you know, greeting cards to friends from college, you know. And now we have social media to keep in touch, but that's a nice thing. I have kept in touch with a lot of old friends, people I've known, pretty much all my life. And, but I feel like I should do more of that. Reading books is something I admire. And, you know, that takes 100% of our concentration, which is something that is not readily available, these days, because there's, you know, so much going on. I'm going to finish up this recording in my indoor studio, which is a walk-in closet, actually, with carpeting. So the acoustics are kind of nice in here. But I began making this podcast episode on July 4th, and it's now August 13th, and I'm adding this third segment to it just to close it out. I got partway through my list and wanted to finish it out. So I was just on the topic about reading books as an admirable goal, but saying that, you know, it really takes a lot of focus and attention, because when you're reading a book, you're not also driving or washing the dishes or whatever. If it's an audiobook, I guess you could drive and listen, but really getting the most out of a book requires some attention and focus. So I think that's why people don't read as much beyond like tweets or Facebook posts or maybe articles that are short, but really sitting down and committing many hours to reading a novel or longer book is a big commitment. And people generally don't have the free time and don't have that focused free time. But I would like to start doing that, maybe setting aside 15, 20 minutes a day to read a longer book and get through it. Either one that's like, what would Google do? You know, these sort of cultural technology commentaries, books like that. Or I like reading to be practical and applicable. I'm tend to be hesitant to sit down and spend many hours reading sort of you know, a novel that's an interesting story, but not something I can really apply to my life. I guess, you know, for some people that's entertaining. For me, I'm sort of entertained by life. So anyway, I admire it when other people get through these books. And, you know, a lot of the books that I hear people talking about are amazing insights to finances or relationships or wellness or some topic like that. But anyway, and then the next item on the list is regarding sentimentality. Some people are really good about, you know, holding on to old items. And because I've had to downsize so much in my life, or chosen to downsize so much, I've over time, you know, sold old things or taken a picture of something that has sentimental value but gotten rid of it. And I guess it's something admirable that I see some people framing a nice old picture and really, you know, cherishing that or something. And some of the other items on the list, and we're getting toward the end, and it was generally supposed to be alphabetical, but some of these are out of order. But that is serving on a nonprofit board. There are people that invest a lot of time volunteering to help with different nonprofit organizations. And that's something I just haven't done before, but I admire it. So it's on the list of things that one should consider doing. And then solar power and wind power at home. Clean power. Coupled with that, I guess, would be, you know, looking for technologies that allow a person to use less electricity. So like LED light bulbs and other such things that make solar and wind power more feasible. I heard a story told from the person who experienced it firsthand about their experience building a home. And they purchased some land and were going to build a home on this land. And they began looking into what companies offered service, electric service, for that property. And there were a couple of different electrical cooperatives in the area, but nobody really provided service there, and there was no delivery of service to that area. There were no power lines, and to get power delivered to that new property that they were going to build, it was going to cost $50,000. So they ended up creating a complete power station on the premises, which I believe did not include a generator option. That would be an obvious thing to have as a backup alternative, would be one of those big diesel generators, but not something you'd want to use ongoing. But what they did was they purchased a bank of batteries, they collected energy from wind and solar and stored it in those batteries, and then used it on demand as they needed it. So the energy was getting created probably 24 hours a day between the wind and the solar power. And that extra reserve that they would have stored in the batteries that was very helpful, but expensive, you know, so $30,000 to get everything set up and going, but less money than having electric lines delivered to the property. Well, anyway, solar and wind power is kind of a big commitment. It can be a big commitment for people. But I do admire it. I admire people finding, you know, alternative energy options. So I would put that on the list of things to do. And sports is the next item. And that would be, you know, watching sports, playing sports. I find that people who are involved in team sports, whether it's football, soccer, baseball, softball, whatever, that tends to be a good thing for individuals and groups. And I would enjoy it and I would do it. I just haven't really had the time or, you know, the connected relationships with people who are into that. I have played softball and soccer in the past, but I don't keep that up as an ongoing thing. And I guess another similar activity would be even, you know, being on a bowling league or something that kind of coincides with the topic I mentioned above about having regular friendships, people that you get together with and watch football or go to the bar or, you know, do some social activity. But yeah, sports is good. And it's good for an individual's health, confidence, building community. There have been lots of studies done on the topic of sports, and those studies show that there are lots of benefits to, especially for young people, getting involved in sports. Next on the list is staying in touch with family and friends, like with phone call or video chat. And I did make a note of that earlier about people who keep in touch with old friends from school or something. But it's the same idea, you know, to reach out. And that's an area I admire, but I'm not as good at as I should be. And I try to be better about that, either sending out cards or making the phone calls. And I know some people are really good with that, and I admire that. So anyway, that's one item. teaching is another item on my list of things that a person should do and that I would like to do more of. I have done some teaching in the past. Really kind of whatever organizations or businesses I've been involved with, there's been some teaching component there. So at the University of Iowa, I would substitute teach sometimes for classes or be an assistant, even though my primary work was with providing tech support. And while working at the College of Law, I did some instruction there for the students, teaching on the topic of word processing back then. And I've also done some teaching through Kirkwood Community College, and then public courses on technology that I would offer through the venue of the public library. But all of those experiences I really enjoy. It's a nice way to connect with people, to empower people, and I'd like to do more of that. And anyone who has, you know, some experience and some talent and the skill as a teacher, I admire when people go out and teach others. So that's on the list. And I think I mentioned earlier, about using Linux and kind of open source, public domain, and, you know, community-created resources. So there is, kind of partnered with that, there is a company called System 76 out of, I believe it's Colorado. So they're a U.S.-based computer company, and they sell these computers with Linux running on them. Initially, I think their computers were basically just kind of custom designed, and they installed Linux and shipped them out. They're getting more advanced, so some of the circuitry is actually their own circuit boards and things that they're using to really make these computers as optimal as possible. But what's neat about these System 76 computers is that some of the materials are wood, so part of it is just, I think, the visual accent of having wood on your computer case, but also, you know, to the extent that they're using wood as a material instead of some other non-renewable material, that's good. And they're made in the U.S., so it's helping create independence, I guess, a bit, you know. And also, even though the parts are from other countries, presumably, but they're assembled here, so helps the local economy, and that's a good thing. And then volunteering, I mentioned a little bit throughout above, you know, volunteering on a board or some such thing. But volunteering is something that people do engage in regularly, either, you know, going to the hospital and working as a volunteer there or working for a local nonprofit or in some respect. And I guess I do a little bit of that in a micro way in that I will do some computer work for nonprofits and not charge them for it. So it's really on a case-by-case basis. I'm not working under the umbrella of some other organization, but just as my own consulting work and either giving a discount on an invoice or completely volunteering for a project. But it's good because there are, you know, people and situations where they might fall through the cracks if there wasn't somebody there to help out and, you know, the economic structure isn't there to make it happen. Sometimes things just need to get done even if a person can't pay for it. So that's volunteering. Waste diversion to recycling and reusable containers. I mentioned buying in bulk earlier, and you know, recycling is something, fortunately, where we are at, we're able to do quite a bit of recycling. I'm surprised in traveling around and traveling to some of these places where you would think people would be very conscientious and mindful about recycling, they're just throwing everything in the trash can and into landfill. I think it's because there aren't enough people to reach critical mass to have, you know, that optimized amount of materials to recycle. There probably aren't any, you know, recycling stations in the middle of, you know, there aren't the facilities or the organizations or companies to manage that in the middle of Montana or in the mountains of, you know, Colorado or something. But still, it just seems kind of odd. And you're really forced in that situation to either use reusable containers or just start filling up landfill in the wilderness with all kinds of garbage and trash, which is, I guess, what some of the state parks have to do. They have to set aside land to just keep filling it up with garbage that people leave behind. But anyway, where we live right now, we can recycle glass, plastic, different kinds of paper, like magazine paper, which is sort of shiny, newspaper, which is dull, and mixed paper, which would be like little boxes and things that products come in, as well as cardboard, tin. So really, pretty much every material you can imagine can get recycled, and that leaves the actual trash being at a very minimum. And I also mentioned that, you know, we're doing the composting, so that helps also divert things from going into landfill. We're into the W's for the most part. We got through the S's. We're getting to the end of the list. So, writing a book. I wrote a book a number of years ago about living in a tiny house, and that was a fun experience. It was a long process. It took a lot of effort, but it might be fun to write a book again. I see that as an alternative to providing content through the web or through videos or through these podcasts, that in the topic of universal design in education, the idea is to provide information to students or learners in a method or a process or a way that each person can access the information easily for their strengths, their learning strengths. So some people will have a learning strength in listening, and they would prefer a podcast, and others would like to watch a video. But there's some people that really enjoy sitting down and reading a book, and a book really forces a person to think through their content, organize their content, and present it in a digestible, practical way for people to access it in that book format. And so for the content creator, it challenges you to use that canvas in an effective way. And that's not easy to do. But yeah, I've thought about writing a book that would encapsulate and describe the whole resourcesforlife.com website and experience, and maybe break that down into chapters or something. But, you know, in a way, these podcast episodes have been an effort to present some information that could be offered in a book format if people were interested in that. So anyway, writing a book. And now here at the end of the list, I'm looking at through there. I had a few odds and ends notes, but I think they were covered up above anyway. So one is about live theater, and I think I mentioned supporting local theater and the arts. Folk music, I like, is good to support because that's usually local. And anything we can support that's local is good. It builds the community, helps the economy, helps people locally. But yeah, that's the list. And I spent quite a bit of time on the, you know, earlier here in this episode, kind of getting through almost to the end. And I think what happened was, as I was recording this, like over a month ago, I got the first two segments done. There were some interruptions there with phone calls that came in while I was recording, and then did not complete it. I was going to complete it later. So for the podcasting, for those of you who followed along, you know, I had been doing a podcast just about every day. And then I broke that down into kind of doing one or two a week, and then went for a few weeks not doing any podcasts. I did have some kind of in the queue as a backlog, so I've just in the last week or two been going through podcasts that I had recorded but not edited, not uploaded. So with this one that I'm finishing up, which is a July 4th podcast episode, immediately after this, I have episode 34, which I recorded today, which is August 13th. So I will be getting to that. And then in the future, instead of having this backlog or having several in the queue, I think I'll try to, for the most part, you know, record and produce the same day or within maybe a day or two. you know, but try to get these put out, because it's kind of weird, you know, posting a podcast that was recorded over a month ago and announcing it. The content's still relevant, but the episode that I recorded today is very specific to a storm that went through the Midwest and went through Iowa, and so that's going to be more relevant to people if it goes online today than if it goes online, you know, a week or a month from now. But anyway, thank you so much for listening, for supporting, for following, for sharing. Comments, all appreciated. And I look forward to sharing more with you again soon. Take care.